Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 8, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya. Narasimhaya. Namaste jas tejas ay avir avir bhava vajra nakha vajra dangshra karma shayan randhaya randhaya tamograsa grasa om swaha abhayam abhayam atmani bhuyashta om shrom. Translation. Prahlad Maharaj speaking. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadeva, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. Purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Sanat Kumar speaks the following words to Maharaj Prithu. Yat pada pankaja palasha vilasha bhaktya karma shayangratitam udgratayanti santaha tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha shroto garnastam aranam bhajavasudevam. Devotees, always engaged in the service of the toes of the Lord's lotus feet, can very easily become free from hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and the yogis, cannot stop the waves of sense gratification, although they try to do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Every living being within this material world has a strong desire to enjoy matter to his fullest satisfaction. For this purpose, the conditioned soul must accept one body after another, and thus his strongly fixed fruitive desires continue. One cannot stop the repetition of birth and death without being completely desireless. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami describes pure bhakti, devotional service, as follows. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakarmadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material gain or material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Unless one is completely freed of all material desires which are caused by the dense darkness of ignorance, one cannot fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, we should always offer our prayers to Lord Nrisimha, who killed Hiranyakashipu. the personification of material desire. Hiranya means gold, and Kashipu means a soft cushion or bed. Materialistic persons always desire to make the body comfortable, and for this they require huge amounts of gold. Thus, Hiranyakashipu was the perfect representative of materialistic life. He was therefore the cause of great disturbance to the topmost devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, until Lord Narasimhadev killed him. Any devotee aspiring to be free of material desires should offer his respectful prayers to Narasimhadev, as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jaste Jasei Avir Avir Bhava Vajra Naka Vajra Dangshra Karmashayan Randhaya Randhaya Tamograsakrasa Om Swaha Abhayam Abhayam Atmane Bhuvyashta Om Shrom. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Narasimhadev, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. What kirtan should we do for Narasimha Chaturdashi? I can suggest one. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was just reading in Giriraj Maharaj's book on the struggle to establish the temple of Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari in Bombay. And it's not published yet. How on Rama Navami, Prabhupada, because in the morning, one devotee had announced that he called all the life members, everyone, come in the evening for Ram Dhun, which means to chant things like Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And Prabhupada, he clarified that in his talk in the evening and said, we'll chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Perfect for all occasions, including this very blissful occasion of Narasimha Chaturdashi. Of course, we can sing other songs also, or chant mantras, but even if we don't, everything is perfect just by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Today is a very blissful day. Every day is a very blissful day in Krishna consciousness, if we're actually in Krishna consciousness. It's a day when we especially remember Narasimhadev appearing and ripping Hiranyakashipu to pieces and all his demoniac attendants also. That doesn't sound very blissful, does it? It's just like if you want to choose some movies from the internet. There's comedy if you want to laugh, and then romance if you want to cry, and war movies if you want to get this bibhatsa rasa, you want to vomit or something. Or vira ras you could get from war movies also. Heroic spirit. Then where's the bliss in hearing about someone ripped to pieces? Well, that goes to show, it's just like Prabhupada said, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you can go on again and again and again and you don't get tired. We're chanting the same mantra. It's a very simple mantra, again and again and again. And we are happy doing that. And that proves that it's a spiritual mantra, because you don't get tired. So in the same way, Ananda Chinmaya, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. There are two verses, right? Patibhavitav is Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. What's the other one? Manasa? Mataya Manasu, yeah. by remembering his pastimes than we conquer over situation of the material world. Yat parnenam pratipalan smaratam upeja. Lila yatena bhuvanani jayatya jasram. He always conquers over the material world by his blissful past. So these are very blissful. Lots of blood and lots of bliss. I always relate this on every Nrisimha Chaturdashi, that when Srila Prabhupada was instructing Jadurani how to paint this Nrisimhadev killing Hiranyakashipu, he sent her back several times. This is the finished page, sent her back at least twice. More blood. So, plenty of blood today and plenty of bliss. So that proves it's spiritual, because where's the bliss? Devotees take bliss in everything. That Krishna does in his various avatars. And it's also blissful to hear the same pastimes again and again and again. We don't get tired of that. There's the verse, yet Srinvata, how does that verse begin? Vayantu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame. Yet Srinvatam rasa gyanam swadu swadu pade pade. Again and again. We're not getting fed up. We're not satisfied. It's a funny thing, because it's said only by hearing about Krishna one can be satisfied. But then we hear about Krishna, we're not satisfied, because we want to hear more and more, because we relish the bliss at every moment, even though it's the same thing all the time. On this day in Vrindavan, at least they did on one Nrisimha Chaturdashi, probably they do every Nrisimha Chaturdashi, at Radha Shama Sunda Temple. That's the founded by Shamananda Goswami. They dress Shamananda in Nrisimha Vesh, and not Shanta Nrisimha, and full bliss, with roaring, with nails and nails of blood, and whew. I wonder what Radharani's thinking. Looks like Sham's in a bit of a bad mood today. What happened? Anyway, he'll get over it. The next day, then again. So, yeah, I wonder what Radha's thinking. You might think that's a bit of a rasa bas there. Anyway, they do it the Sham. It's in Vrindavan. So the non-devotees, they may wonder, what is it, all this killing business? Killing the demons? That doesn't sound like a very nice God. He should always be nice. Yeah, he's being nice. Actually, his great mercy on the demons, normally people have to wait many, many, many lifetimes to get the darshan of the Lord, or to get liberated. But if the demons are really, really... The normal process, you have to come to the human form of life, go in the Varnashram system, and then practice that, and then after... Varnashram system means karma kanda, and then sarva karma kelam parata gyanam gyane parisimapyate. Then after performing karma, you come to the platform of gyan, then bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mang prapadyate vasudeva sarva miti samahatma sudurlabha. Then after many, many births of dry, boring gyan, some pure devotee gives you a pakora offered to Krishna or something, then you get a eureka moment. Oh, it's Krishna! And then you surrender to Krishna, understanding that Krishna is all in all. So it's a very long process. But the demons, they're not even in the process. They're not in the process, but they're going the other way. So the really bad demons, just to give them some mercy, Krishna sends them to cool off in the Brahma Jyoti for some time. Gives them liberation. And that impression will remain in their consciousness of Krishna killing them, so that's his great mercy upon them. The story of Narasimha Dev, as we know, is related in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. The verse we read today, just now, is from the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. Nrsimha first appears, if I'm not mistaken, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, in the list of the avatars, just mentioned there. And here in the fifth canto, we have in the description of the universe how in different dvipas, different islands in the universe, the residents offer the Lord prayers. So the residents, it's all Jambadvipa. Now there are different varshas. Just like there's, we're in Bharata Varsha, there's Hari Varsha, Ketu Madha Varsha, and all these. So Prahlad Maharaj offers prayers to Nrsimhadev, which we just read. And this prayer, I first became aware of it, as I think everyone in the room at the time must have been, you know, 100 or more devotees at Bhaktivedanta Manath. They all became aware of it when our GBC, this must have been 1976, I guess it was, when this book had just been released, the fifth canto, part two, that must have been. And he had this verse. It's not actually a verse. It's not a verse. It's prose. He had it written on the board and then had everyone chant it. This is the morning class, and said that Prabhupada wanted every devotee to learn this. It's a very suitable prayer for those of us who have material desires in our hearts. They're just like the chest of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu Vakshaha. The only way they could be pierced by Shilartankanaka, the nails, chisel-like nails, which broke the stone-like chest of Hiranyakashipu. So the same thing, you know, that those of us who have hearts are hard with material desires, we can ask Narasimhadev to vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Now I'm going to read Nrsimha Leela from Harivansha Purana. Some time ago, well, actually for many years, I'd been curious, what is that? Because we see it's quoted here and there in Srila Prabhupada's books. That's considered to be a supplement to Mahabharata and has many pastimes of Krishna within it. So I managed to come across a translation in English with the verses which they translate in Devanagari script. So although the English is really not up to this, long way from being what we might call standard English, by looking at the Sanskrit verses, if something was too unclear, I mostly managed to work out what it's all about. So I'll read that now. Now, very interesting about this narration in Harivansha Purana is that there are many differences with the story in the Bhagavatam. First thing, the narration of Prahlad being tortured is not there. And Nrsimha coming out of a pillar is not there. And what else? Well, we'll see as we go along. Okay, this is chapter 41 of the Bhavishya Parva, one of the three Parvas in Harivansha, the last one. So this has been titled Narasimha's Arrival in the court of Hiranyakashipu. I'll just read the translations. So Vaishampayana is speaking to Janamajaya. So you can see it's a continuation of Mahabharata. Because the Mahabharata was spoken by who to who? Vyasadeva to Ganesh. And then you can go inside. Russian dolls. You know that? There's one doll inside another, inside another, inside another. So there's one story inside another, inside another. But the main narration is Vaishampayana speaking to Janamajaya. So, O Janamajaya, I have till now narrated the pastimes of 12 avatars of Vishnu. Now listen to the story of the Narasimha, incarnation of Vishnu, in which the Lord, taking the form of a man-lion, had killed the daitya, Hiranyakashipu. Pura, Kritha Yuga, a long time ago, in the Satya Yuga, the daitya, king, Hiranyakashipu, who is referred to here as Prabhu, which is normally a name for God, but it means someone who's very powerful and influential. He performed severe tapasya. Now the kind of tapasya he performed is also different to the one described in Bhagavatam. Of course, there's kalpa bhed in different kalpas. The Lord appears. It's not just once in eternity that the Lord gets a desire to fight and take the form of Narasimha. So there's going to be someone taking the form of Hiranyakashipu. But it may be a bit different every time, the pastimes. So Hiranyakashipu was in water for 11,500 years, which presumably that's the years of the demigods. Otherwise, that's nothing exceptional for in terms of tapasya, in terms of time. He controlled his mind, his senses. He observed brahmacharya. That's what we're supposed to do, right? But he did that, but he's not a good man. He had some other desire. Brahma became pleased with him, and Brahma, who is the guru of all the living beings, moving and non-moving, as bright as the sun, came on his swan carrier, surrounded by the Adityas, Vasus, Sadyas, Marudganas, various demigods, Vishvedes, Rudras, Yakshas, Rakshas, Kinnaras, and then the personified directions, sub-directions, rivers, oceans, constellations, and nakshatras. The various gods who were the lords of the Muhurtas, of the various planets, the Brahmarshis, Siddhas, Saptarshis, the Rajarshis, Gandharvas, Apsaras, and others. So it was quite a turnout. All the big shots in the universe, and some medium shots also. They all came before Hiranyakashipu, and Brahma said that you have performed this excellent vow, you've done it very well, you are my devotee, means that Hiranyakashipu must have been meditating on Brahma. I'm very pleased with your very difficult tapasya. So all bhadram, all good for you. So what do you want? It's understood when someone does tapasya, they want something. They control the mind and senses. But not to get free from the desires for not to get free from desire. It's not a transcendental meditation. The aim is to indulge the mind and senses more. So, Brahma asks, what boon do you want? I'll fulfill it. Then Hiranyakashipu, feeling very delighted, spoke with folded hands in supplication. Not that he actually had any love for Brahma, but he wanted to get something from him. So, here we go. It's very similar to what we hear in Bhagavatam, what he wanted. Hiranyakashipu said, none of the gods, demons, asnats, asuras, gandharvas, yakshas, nagas, rakshasas, humans, or pishachas should be able to kill me in any way. Nor the rishis, tapasvis, should curse me and be able to kill me in that way. I should remain invincible from weapons, astras, and shastras. I shouldn't be able to be killed by mountains, nor by trees, nor with any dry or wet element, nor by any weapon. Not in heaven, not in the lower worlds, not in the sky or on the earth, neither during day or night, or by any other means. Only one thing. He left something open. Only such a person who is competent enough to kill me and all my retinue, all the demons with me, and my army and chariots with a single slap, he alone should be able to kill me. So there you go. It's a bit different. Then he asked, I should be able to pervade in the sun, the moon, the wind, the fire, water, the sky, constellations, and the 10 directions. So in other words, he's asking for the boon of being omnipresent, omnipresence, which Vishnu has, and Vishnu gives that boon also to Brahma, Shiva, and some others. But it's only within one Brahmanda. I should be the lord of Karma. This here means the god Kamadev, Krodha, Varuna, Yama, Indra, Kuvera, the lord of the riches, and the lord of the Kimpurushas. And whenever there's a war, a fight, all all the great weapons, heavenly weapons, divya astras, they should come to me in their personified form. They should come like that and be. So the grand sire of the universe said, great, okay, fine, wonderful, take it. Fulfill all the desires that you want. Remember in Bhagavatam we find Nrsimhadev telling Brahma afterwards, don't do that again. Don't give boons like that to demons. So I'll give you what you want, but even though these boons are very difficult to achieve, but actually by your very tapasya you've earned it. I'm giving it, but you've already earned it by your all your desires will be fulfilled for sure, no doubt about it. So Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, thus speaking, Lord Brahma returned to his own place. Vairaja means beyond the viraja, beyond the river. So then when they heard about this, all the gods, all of them, they said, they came before Brahma and said, really? Really, you gave a boon like that to him? And they said, he's gonna become really puffed up. He's gonna torture us. So now you gave that boon. Now you have to think of how he can be killed. It's all your fault. So He didn't say that, I'm paraphrasing here. You're the sole creator of the world, you're very powerful. You're the creator of Havya and Kavya. And you are material energy personified in the sense that it's Brahmanda, the universe in everything within it is non-different from Lord Brahma in one sense. So Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, listening to the words of the gods, which were meant for their own benefit. They were meant for the benefit of the worlds, all the worlds. Lord Prajapati, Brahma, spoke to them with nectar-like sweet words, ensuring them and others. He told them that, yeah, he has to get the result of his tapasya, but then after he's done that, then Lord Vishnu himself will kill this demon. So you may wonder, well, why didn't Vishnu come immediately to kill Hiranyakashipu when he started terrorizing everyone and especially torturing Prahlad? Well, he had to get the result of his tapasya. That's the idea. And to have his boons fulfilled. So it took a little time. That's one reason. So hearing the words of Lord Brahma, who is Pankaja Janmanaha. He's born from that which is born from mud. In other words, he's born from a lotus. Padmaja, born from a lotus. Lord Brahma, and then the gods were happy and went back to their own abodes. And then, predictably, when Hiranyakashipu got this boon, he started causing pain to all the people, becoming extremely arrogant, having got the boon from Brahma. He thought, I'm invincible. He could say, Ishwaroham aham bhogi, Siddhoham balavan sukhi. And it would seem to make great sense. He's the controller. Ishwaroham aham, he's the enjoyer of everything. He's Siddha, he's become perfect in austerities. He's powerful and happy. He was very deeply in the demoniac way of thinking. Then, he went to the ashrams of the various munis and brahmanas and people who were engaged in various vratas and who engaged in satya dharma and controlling the senses and who in all senses. And then what did he do? Well, you can understand. He insulted them, destroyed their... It's just said in brief, but you can understand. He gave great trouble to them. He defeated all the gods in the three worlds and usurped the kingdoms of all the three worlds. And then he started living in heaven, Swarga Loka. Again, being so arrogant with this boon, the Asura, influenced by Kala Dharma, he's still under the influence of time. He declared that the yajnas, which are offered and the demigods are supposed to take the share, instead the demons would take. Demons beginning with him. So therefore the Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, various other gods, Yakshas, Brahmanas, Maharshis, they took refuge with Narayana, who is the Yajna Purusha, the eternal Brahman, who is adorable by the best, present and future, and the delight of all good people. So the demigods approaching Lord Narayana said to him, O illustrious one, O Narayana Dev, we have arrived here to take refuge in you. You are the preserver, the maintainer, the supreme preceptor. You are the best of the gods. You are Lord of the gods, beginning with Brahma. You have eyes, just like spotless lotus flowers. So please protect us and see how you can kill this daitya and save us from the terror of Hiranyakashipu. So Lord Vishnu said, he gave Abhayadam, Mahashucha. You don't be worried, I'll give fearlessness to you, and again you shall get control over the heavenly world. In course of time, not very long, I will kill the Daitya king, Hiranyakashipu, the son of Diti, who has become invincible because he is getting these boons from Brahma. I'll kill him along with his army. Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, thus speaking, Lord Vishnu sent away the gods, and he himself resolved to kill Hiranyakashipu. So I may say, well, it seems like immediately it's all happening, that Hiranyakashipu. But you can understand that in universal time, if a short time for Vishnu can be a long time for us. So anyway, he went to the Himalayas, and reaching there, he thought a little bit, what kind of form should I take to kill this king of the demons? What's the best form for killing him who is so inimical to the gods? Then he took the form of, any guesses? Narasimha, man-lion form, which had never been seen before, and which was invincible to the Daityas and Danavas. Then it said here that he took help from Omkara. He used Omkara. Then, although he's non-different from Omkara, but he pronounced Omkara, and then taking help from that, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal Lord Vishnu, went to the palace of Hiranyakashipu. He himself, Narasimha, was resplendent like the sun and like the moon. Then it says here, the words given is Paning Sangsprisha Parnina, which means he touched one hand with the other. But I can extrapolate, he's rubbing his hands when you think, ah. Oh. Good. Yeah. Rubbing his hands in anticipation. Narasimha is going to have a good fight. He's feeling pleased about that. So then he came and saw the assembly hall of Hiranyakashipu, which is described, translating into English, well, vistirna, vast, divya, wonderful, ramya, here it's, yeah, pleasant, manoramam, charming, sarva kama yutang shubram, which is just translated, endowed with all the desired pleasures. So the assembly was 150 yojanas in length and 100 yojanas in width. That's his assembly hall. It was 5 yojanas high. And it was an aerial mansion. It went in the sky and moved at the will of whoever was controlling it, which would be Hiranyakashipu. In that sabha, old age, grief and fatigue could not enter. It was immobile. Now, I just said it was moving, it was immobile. I guess that means it was very firm and solid and strong, very beautiful, very comfortable, with many beautiful sitting places, and it was bright like fire. There was a bathing tank inside it, which had been built by Vishwakarma, which had gem-studded trees laden with flowers and fruits. Nilapita sitashaya. He says he had trunks. I don't know what that means. Pillars. It had pillars. Yeah, pillars, and then spread over the pillars canopies with decorated with beads and cloth in all different colors, and then many shoots and creepers, various flora was carved in it. And then in the sabha there were precious seeds which looked very nice, shiny very nicely. The whole assembly looked like clouds in the sky reflected in water, or like a boat floating on the surface of the water. It was very beautiful and illuminating. And not only that, but it had a beautiful, pleasing fragrance. And there was in that assembly, anyone who entered would transcend material happiness and pain. In other words, they'd come up to a absolutely higher level altogether, and neither heat nor cold were experienced in there. So it gives some idea of how it goes on with the description. It goes on and on and on, actually. It just gives some idea of how Hiranyakashipu was enjoying, at what level of opulence. Whoever was in that assembly hall, no one would ever feel hungry, thirsty, or fatigued. There were various decorative pillars studded with divine gems, which are very solid and hard, and it shone with its own luster. There was no need of lighting anything because to light it, because it was with its own luster. It was like the sun and the moon and the fire. It stated it was at the backside of heaven. I guess that was the parking place or something. It's difficult to understand all these things. It was so bright it put the sun to shame. All worldly pleasure, whatever pleasures are there in the universe, in the earthly sphere, in the heavenly sphere, everything was there in abundance. All kinds of juicy drinks and foods, everything was there in huge quantities. And there were fragrant garlands were regularly made there from the trees, blossoming with flowers, which were also full of fruit. He said there's no influence of hot and cold, but the hot water was easily available in the winter and the cold water in summer. Nrisimha, he's seeing all of this, saw beautiful trees over the bank with a river there, with flowers on the branches, and many, many branches. And the description goes on and on. Trees with creepers, the flowers were extremely fragrant and the fruits were delicious and juicy. The Lord saw there lakes of cool water, and all the tirthas had become present in the sabha. The lakes were filled with lotuses of various varieties, such as Nalina and Pundarik. 1,000 petal lotuses, blue-colored, red-colored. There were all kinds of birds there, they're pleasing birds, like swans, ducks, here it says malans, it's one kind of duck, geese, cranes, osprey. So they were seen in couples together, male and female. All the tanks and the lakes there were filled with spotless clean water, resembling crystals, crystal gems in their clarity. And in all the lakes, the white eight-petal lotuses were blooming. And then the sweet sound of swans, it says, and the sound of swans and of the minor birds were filling up the sky, all different kinds of birds. So the Lord saw the trees, the branches of which were blossoming with flowers and tender shoots and creepers, and then gives a list of some of the flowers that were seen there, the flowers and trees. Ketoki, Ashoka, pine tree, it says, white lotus, nutmeg, tilak tree, arjuna tree, mango, kadamba tree, Mimusops elengi, I guess that's a Latin name. Then a shrub, another Latin, some more Latin names. The tree of trumpet flowers, silk cotton trees, turmeric plants, sula, tala we know. Priala, that means coral. Champak, and so many other trees. They added beauty to the place. The coral trees with their red luster appeared like flames of the forest fire. and then it goes on to describe Vanjula trees, Ashok trees. They're very high and how beautiful they were. And then a list of the names of various more trees. Varana, Vatsanaba, jackfruit, sandalwood, Nila, blue trees. Sumana, very pleasing to the mind. Pita, yellow trees, Amla, Pipal, Tenduk, Mairobalan, which means that that's one of the ingredients of Triphala Churna, isn't it? Jasmine, Bhadradaruka, again Mairobalan, rose apple trees. That's, if we look in the Sanskrit, that's Kapita, breadfruit, Shaila Baluka, rose in Arjun tree. There's some. So many trees are described. Nipa, Aguru, Kadamba, Bhavya, pomegranate tree, lemon tree, coconut tree, Asvatida tree, Hing tree, palm, betel nut trees, and so many, and bushes and tamals. And anyway, you get the idea. It was a very opulent place. And in the trees, there were different birds like partridges, peacocks, intoxicated cuckoos. So many birds of all different colors and all other creatures were seen there by Narasimha. So you get the idea of some of the opulence. And it continues. O Janamajay, Vaishampayana says, the immensely strong and powerful Daitya Hiranyakashipu was situated on a throne which was 4 cubits in length, a very large throne. The Singhasana, the lion throne, had the luster of the sun, and it was divine. Means of very high quality, covered with a cloth. Hiranyakashipu was sitting on it, looking very graceful, with gold rings in his ears, the splendor of which was spreading everywhere. The wind carrying the fragrance went slowly past the Daitya King without, it didn't even have a particle of dust in it. And then the Gandharvas sang in divine tones for the pleasure of Hiranyakashipu. Thousands of Apsaras, who are very well trained and versed in dance and music, were dancing there. Some of the names are given. Famous Apsaras. Visvachi, Sahajanya, Pramlocha, Divya, Saurabhi, Samichi, Punja Kastala, Mishrakeshi, Ramba, Chitrasena, Suchisnita, Charunetra, Gritachi, Menaka, Urvasi, and there were others. So Hiranyakashipu, sitting on his throne, surrounded by thousands of beautiful women who are all with very beautiful ornaments and gold earrings. For a materialist, what could be more than this? What could be better than this? So he's feeling very happy. Not actually, because there's no happiness in material life, but appeared to be happy. And he was also surrounded by various daityas who were there, who had received from him boons. So they felt themselves dependent on him. Present there is described Bali, the son of Virochana, Narakasura, the conqueror of the earth, Prahlad, Gavishta, these are all demons, Chandrahanta, Krodahanta, Sumana, Sumati, Kara, Gatodara, Mahaparshva, Katana, Pithara, Vishvarupa, Rupa, Virupa. That means ugly. That's one meaning of it. It could mean very beautiful also. Dashagriva. Dashagriva is normally the name given to Ravana, but it must be a different one. Meghavasa, Maharava, Kartaba, Vikartaba, Samhrada. That's the son of Hiranyakashipu, we learn from the Bhagavatam. And Indra Tapana, besides many other daityas and danavas, who had shining earrings and flower garlands and knew how to speak. Now, apart from Hiranyakashipu, here it's described that all the danavas had also performed various austerities, maybe not to the extent of him, but they also, by the boons they had undergone, become free from the danger of death. So these daityas who had fantastic weapons with them, they were adoring Hiranyakashipu as being even more demoniac than themselves, or more powerful. So they came and went wearing flower garlands and ornaments. They came and went by illuminated planes. They all had superb costumes and ornaments, superb vehicles, superb weapons, superb flags, everything. They came daily and worshipped Hiranyakashipu. It's also described they had armlets. On the particular day when Narasimha came, on that day, he specifically noticed that the asuras, who are like mountains, they were so big, they had golden crowns on their heads and were resplendent like the sun. Then, says here, the astonishing types of pedestals were found in every street over which various times of gems was. In other words, the roads were made of gems. They had the buildings had windows made of ivory. Lord Narasimha saw Hiranyakashipu there with glittering ornaments of gold. His bodily luster was like the sun rays. So it appeared by looking at him, it appeared that he was on fire. He was so bright. And he was being worshipped by thousands of demons, of demon fighters. Now, continuing, Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, thereafter, like fire hidden within the ashes, Lord Vishnu, in the body of Narasimha, was seen by the daityas. Then they saw, he was looking at them and they saw, hey, who's that? And they saw him like Kala Chakra, looking like the wheel of time, the wheel of death. So among themselves, the demons, along with Hiranyakashipu, oh, that's surprising. What's this? There's a form who's white like the moon. His form is white like the conch, white like the white lotus. His beauty is resplendent like the rays of thousands of moons. And it's very wonderful. It's described particularly, Narasimha had curly hair over his face, and he was resplendent like thousands of moons. Impelled by death in the form of Narasimha, and being burnt with fire emanating from his eyes, the greatly powerful Danavas were talking among themselves. At that time, Prahlad, the valorous son of Hiranyakashipu, having divine vision, witnessed Lord Vishnu in his lion-like form. Seeing the Lord in this astonishing form, like a golden mountain, Hiranyakashipu and all the other daityas, they became astonished. What's this? What's going on? So Prahlad, at that point of time, Prahlad said, he started praying to Nrisimha. O illustrious one, O valorous one, you are the Adi Purush for the daityas. In other words, they're also descendants of him, ultimately. Prahlad continued, I have neither seen or heard of this form previously. You are the one whose place of birth is unknown, or it can be that he has manifested himself from the unmanifest. What is this form which is so astonishing? I'm getting a feeling that you've taken this form. This terrible form must be for the destruction of the demons. Then Prahlad spoke of his vision. I see within your body, he's speaking to Nrisimhadev, all the gods, oceans and rivers, the various mountains, the moon, the constellations, the Adityas, Ashwini Kumaras, Kuvera, Varuna, Yama, Indra, the Marudgans, the Maruts, the wind gods, various other gods, Gandharvas, the Munis performing tapasya, the Nagas, the Yakshas, the Pishachas, the terrible Rakshasas, Brahma and Lord Shiva and Pashupati. That's Lord Shiva. They're all lodged in your forehead. So, although Narasimha had come to kill all of them, they were already within him. Nothing is different from him. Then, Prahlad continuing to describe what he sees in the body of Narasimha. Everything mobile and immobile. All the living beings. I see, plus I see what you're showing yourself in front of us. Yourself surrounded by the demons. So the demons with all the vimanas, the carrying instruments of all the three worlds. All the eternal loka dharmas can be seen in the body of Narasimha. So the things like Brahmana dharma, Kshatriya dharma, Vaishya dharma, all this is seen within the body of Narasimha. Just like the moon, along with all the attendant stars, is seen in a mirror. So in that way, I'm seeing everything within you. Prahlad is praying to Narasimha. So within the body of Narasimha, Prahlad said, I see Prajapati, Lord Brahma, Mahatnu Manu, it's said here. Manu, the planets, I see yoga, the earth, the sky, the time of trouble, the time of patience. I see Rajagun, Sattvagun, Tapasya, and the control of sense organs. Everything's already there within you. The Sanat Kumars, Vishvedevs, the Apsaras, Kama, Krodha, Harsha, Darpa. That's Krodha, Harsha, and Darpa means anger, delight, and arrogance. So all of these are to be found within your body. Then Prahlad spoke these words, and the Daityapati Hiranyakashipu, not very happy that Prahlad is saying this, he lowered his head and glanced towards the eastern direction. So the Daityas attack Narasimha with weapons is the next chapter. And again, it's different from the Bhagavatam description, because we find that in the Bhagavatam description that, first of all, Hiranyakashipu alone attacked Narasimha. And then when Narasimha had killed Hiranyakashipu, then he killed the armies. But here it's of the demons. So a different description here. Vaishampayana said, O Janamejaya, listening to the words of Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, the lord of the Daityas, spoke to all the Danavas present there. O Daitya, you capture this wild creature with a lion's body. See, they say, if they see some unusual animal, they may want to capture, put in the zoo, something like that. In case he puts your life in danger, then you kill him. So on hearing this command, the Danavas felt delighted. They thought, oh, great, we'll capture this creature. They didn't know, huh? He can't be captured. Only captured by love, and they didn't have any love for him. They started throwing all kinds of terrific weapons at him to try to get him frightened. Then the lion form of the Lord, resembling the god of death, came closer, and he shattered the whole building just by his foot. He just gave it one kick, and that was the end of the assembly hall. No one else could do that, obviously. Hiranyakashipu, seeing this, he became extremely angry. His eyes were burning in rage, and he himself shot several weapons at the lion. So that means he didn't think this was invincible. He thought he would defeat him. I've defeated everyone else, I'm going to defeat him also. Whoever's disturbing us. No one dared to disturb us. Well, someone dared, okay, I'll sort him out. So all kinds of terrible weapons were shot at Narasimha. The names of them are listed here. Dandasta, Kala Chakra, Vishnu Chakra, Dharma Chakra, Maha Chakra, Ajita Chakra, Aindra Chakra, Rishi Chakra, Brahma Chakra, that is the Brahmastra. Then Rudrastra, the weapon of Lord Shiva. The spear, a Kankala. I don't know what many of these are, I'm just saying. Mushala means a torch, flame torch, held in the hand. Brahmashira weapon, Brahmastra. Aishakastra. Aindrastra, some of them are repeated. Matanastra, Kapalastra, Kincharastra, the terrific Shakti, the Kronchastra. So then it goes on and on and on listing. We don't know what they are. The names of various weapons, which were released by Hiranyakashipu and the Daityas at Narasimha. Then I'm skipping a few, there's a long list. Gandharvastra Nandaka, that's the supposed to be the best sword. Then one of the demons, he also had something very similar to the Brahmastra, the Pashupadastra. It was all useless. It was like making offerings into the... it was as if they were offering by showering weapons all in one place. It looked like they were offering into the... It looked like they were offering into the ghee, into the flour in a sacrifice, but it wasn't. So in this way, Hiranyakashipu, with his soldiers, they surrounded Lord Narasimhadev, just like the huge mountain in the Himalayas becomes, the peak of the mountain becomes invisible due to clouds. So in the same way, Narasimha became covered by all the daitya surrounding him, which seemed to be a very dangerous position, but of course not for Lord Vishnu. So from all sides, they started shooting their weapons, the daityas. They're listed again. Prasas, parshas, spears, clubs, mushala, that means torch with fire. Vajra, very, very hard. Firearms, it's said here. I don't know if that's a modern interpretation or what. Rocks, huge trees, mudgaras, that's like a hammer, kutapashas, okali, mountains, throwing mountains in the battle, shataghnis, the danda, the stick thrown as a weapon, and even though all these weapons were thrown at Narasimha, he wasn't even slightly wounded. So the Danavas with nooses in their hands for capturing enemies, their energy, their power, their vigor, they were like the forces of Indra, or like the terrible nature that manifest as lightning or thunder. They surrounded Narasimha from all sides with having weapons in both their hands. And because of this, they looked like snakes with three hoods. Because it's described they're holding up their weapons like this. So it looks like they head and like that. Then it's describing the demigods, getting into detail again. Golden garlands on all their limbs. And other monuments on other parts of their bodies. See, in Vedic culture, people dress up to go to battle. They put on all ornaments and jewels all over their body. This is describing the daityas, so they are repetitive. So what happened, that Lord Narasimha, even though he's bright like the sun, he became largely covered by so many weapons from the demons. All at once, they all released their fantastic weapons. So just like a mountain can be seen vaguely through the clouds, so Narasimha could be seen just looking like a mountain with its caves and trees. You could just see a little bit through a chink in the clouds. Otherwise, it seems that the daityas had completely surrounded and vanquished Narasimhadev. So all the daityas, they're completely surrounding them and shooting their that would be enough to kill anyone thousands of times over. But he just stood there, that's all. As bright as fire, which becoming brighter, and then the daityas became frightened. So the asuras, they were very powerful and they were very angry. And then they stepped back a bit and started shooting arrows at Narasimha, but just not ordinary arrows. They were the kind of arrows which are released at the time of devastation with the fire, to set fire to everything. It looked like that. However, all their attacks couldn't come to anything. O Janamajaya, among those Danavas, they're described, now describing the Danavas and Daityas, what they looked like. Some rode on donkeys. Some of them took the faces of donkeys. Some of them, their faces looked like crocodiles, while others looked like those of serpents. Some of the faces looked like wolves and boars. Some of the daityas looked very nice with a luster like the morning sun. Some of the daityas had faces like comets. I wonder what that would look like. And then various daityas, some of them resembled the full moon, some the half moon, and some like a blazing fire. The faces of some of them, they'd taken the faces of taken the forms of swans and cocks. Some of them had deformed faces. She's describing some of them who looked very beautiful, but some of them had deformed faces. They look really horrible. Some of them had five faces. Some of them had protruding tongues. They must look very fearful, huh? While others had faces resembling crows or vultures. Whew. Must have been pretty frightening for anyone except Nrisimhadev. I mean, even one of these daityas is enough to wipe out a whole planet. The tongues of some of the daityas were shining like lightning. Some of them had three heads. Some of them had faces resembling comets. And they were full of pride and puffed up. Some of them had faces like those of a huge crocodile. But the body of Lord Narasimha was still bright, like the Kailash mountain. He couldn't be destroyed. They had a good try. The daityas put on a huge shower of various weapons, but it caused him absolutely no harm whatsoever. The Danavas, who were enraged like snakes, they started making a hissing noise, emulating snakes. And again, they threw other weapons at the chest of Narayana, Narasimha. But all their weapons is just like if you send fireflies toward the mountain. You can try and keep a track of where they are, but they eventually, the mountain is so great that the firefly, you just can't see it, it merges into the mountain. So in the same way, the daityas, they merged into the effulgence of the Lord and they couldn't be seen, some of them. Then they started shooting divine chakras at him, trying some more difficult tricks. Useless. Then the chakras, yeah, they're fire chakras. So they land and then they start burning. Can you imagine? Very fearsome. And it says that the sky was filled with the chakras shot. They're so bright it appeared that there were several suns and moons appearing at the time of dissolution. All the chakras, what happened to them? They're firing at him and swallowing them up. like the sun and moon entering the belly of Vishnu at the time of dissolution. Then Narasimha, all powerful, swallowed there like a fire eater. Have you seen that? Someone eats fire. So their fiery chakras, he swallowed them all. Then Hiranyakashipu, he got a Shakti weapon, like a spear, and shot that. So Lord Narasimha simply uttered a sound, Hunkar, and reduced it to ashes. A major weapon of Hiranyakashipu. So it fell down like a burning comet having fallen from the sky. Then all the daityas together, they shot a series of arrows known as Narachas, the ones with, they have a round head. So from a distance it looked as if there was a garland of bluish flowers, because there were so many of these Narachas going all at once. Then Lord Narasimha, he himself started to make a lot of noise. And he wandered here and there throughout the Daitya army at will and started picking them up and finishing them off as he wished. He picked them up very easily, these huge daityas, just like the wind takes a piece of straw. Then the daityas going up in the sky started showering rains of stones. And each stone was like a huge tree. And then they started throwing pieces of mountains. But it was useless. It was just a waste of time. Although Lord Narasimha became covered, there were so many stones being thrown at him that he couldn't be seen. But it still didn't make any difference to him whatsoever. Just like a mountain, the example is given here, that the sea comes up against the mountain. The sea is very powerful, but it can't do anything to the mountain. So in the same way, the daityas, all of them are very powerful, and all of them together, they couldn't disturb Narasimha, who was standing there. So they gave up with rains of stones, and they went to something with more conventional, rain of water. Heavy rain on all four sides, all centered on Narasimha. So rain just fell and fell and fell and fell. And forceful winds, heavily blowing winds, and more and more, heavier and heavy rainfall. And again, Narasimha. They were trying everything, but he's just not disturbed whatsoever. They were really amazed by all of this, because you can imagine, because they had their boons, they had their power, they'd subdued the demigods, and then this being comes. He hasn't attacked them yet. He's just standing there, enjoying it all. So there he is in the form of a man lion standing on the battleground, expanding his maya with all the rain, but he couldn't touch him, didn't even touch him. So the Danavas then created illusory wind and fire to remove the rain. I guess there's so much rain it was a problem for them. Then with the fire became so powerful, they ignited fire to destroy the rainwater which they had invoked. But then the fire became so powerful that it covered the sky and the earth and everywhere with its flames. So it became out of control, but it couldn't do any harm again. It couldn't do any harm to Lord Narasimha. They wanted to burn him, but they couldn't do anything. Then Indra arrived, and he did everyone a favor with his clouds and extinguished the fire. Then the Danavas, what's their next trick? Then they made everything completely dark so no one could see anything in the entire universe was completely covered by darkness. And the demons got their weapons ready again. But Lord Narasimha, in the darkness, he shone like the sun with rays, so that it was useless making their darkness. So at that time they saw the Danavas, the demons, they saw the forehead of the Lord, and it's described here, he had an eyebrow with three tufts which appeared like the Ganga with three paths flowing over the Trikut mountain, which looked very graceful. Okay, still more fighting. They didn't give up yet. So all their illusions were shattered, and then the Daityas, they went back to Hiranyakashipu and said, phew, couldn't do anything. They became hopeless, hatasha. Then they went to Hiranyakashipu. Then Hiranyakashipu, it's his turn to get ready for fighting. And he got red with anger. Someone's come trying to disturb me. What harm am I doing? I'm sitting here very nicely. So he became so hot in anger that he started burning the earth with his rage, and all the oceans, the trees, the forests, the mountains. Everything was shaking due to Hiranyakashipu's anger, and that of the Daitya kings. And darkness was spread everywhere. Thick darkness. No one could see anything. So the seven types of wind, they also became disturbed because of the upcoming danger. And the planets which appear at the time of the destruction of the earth appeared there in the sky at that time. And various astronomical symptoms were there, which shouldn't happen, but they and some of them are described, but I don't understand them, probably you won't either. At a wrong time, the moon made a conjunction with various planets, and in this way, all the different planets, it's bad omens, that's what it is, bad omens for the demons. The sun became covered with the very black clouds that obstruct, the clouds that are so black that they completely black out the sun. Sometimes we see that, don't we, in the rainy season. It's the midday and it's almost like black because the clouds are so thick. So the sun god made, then at that point the sun god made tremendous heat. And then from that came out a column of smoke, and seven suns appeared in the sky. And all of them were so hot, they were issuing smoke. The lodge, the moon, was decorated by seven planets. And then it's described, it's all astrological, so astronomical, astrological. So the import of it, I don't understand. Venus was lodged to the left of the moon. Jupiter was lodged to his right. Saturn and Mars. Mars was red like the rising sun. Interesting. That the modern scientists have found out, right? That Mars is red. So Saturn and Mars were to the left and right of the sun, I guess it is. So all the planets, they started going up the side of Meru, the scene on the side of Meru Mountain. It was a constellation as if it was at the time of dissolution. And then the moon, who's normally with his wife Rohini, and when they're together, it's very auspicious for the world, but they became separated, so it became very inauspicious. The moon was not only eclipsed by Rahu, which is very inauspicious, but it was also wounded, it says here, by comets. There are so many comets which started advancing toward the moon. Indra, the god of gods, started pouring rain of blood. He got into it also. And then the Vidyun Mali planet started falling from the sky with great thunder. And then other inauspicious signs. The trees started blooming and giving fruit at the wrong seasons. All the creepers were laden with fruit. So that might sound like a good omen, but it's for the demons, it's a bad omen, because it indicates their destruction. Now it says here, and I can't really understand it, the fruits started emerging from the fruits and the flowers from the flowers. The images of the deities in the temples were blinking, laughing, crying aloud, emitting smoke sometimes or issuing flames of fire. These are all, again, indications of the time of dissolution. The domestic animals started uniting with the wild animals of the forest. At the presence of Lord Narasimha, all of them cried in panic. The rivers started flowing in the opposite direction. Their water became all muddied up. The sun god came in the afternoon time. Or rather, the sun god, yeah, he's as if to set. As if to set, yeah. The directions were filled with the dust of red color. And they couldn't become bright. The gods in the temples, all worship stopped. The chaitra trees were shattered. And with the force of the wind, they were shaken. By this time, the sun had reached the time of afternoon. And after that time, then the dissolution, the destruction of the universe begins. So it's getting to that point. It seemed like that. The luster of the sun had decreased so much, there was no shadow anywhere on earth. Then another bad sign. In the storehouse of Hiranyakashipu, all the various bees had made their beehives, so that's considered inauspicious somehow or other. There was smoke in the arsenals, the storehouses of arms. And then Hiranyakashipu asked his family priest, I guess this must be Shukracharya, why? What's going on? Why are these horrible things happening in my kingdom? Tell me about it truthfully. I'm very anxious. Yeah, then Shukra said, O great Daitya King, listen to my words carefully. I'm going to tell you about the great disturbances in your kingdom, so just listen carefully. So he told him straightforwardly, O great demon, O great Asura, in any country where these disturbances are witnessed, the king is deprived of the kingship. Or the king meets with his death. Either way, he loses his kingdom by it being destroyed or being taken away from him, or he dies, which means either way he loses his kingdom. These are the symptoms of what's about to happen. So think over the matter. You're very intelligent. So you think about it and try to... You can see how to deal with this situation. Otherwise, there'll be tremendous danger. Think what you have to do in this dangerous situation. Then Shukracharya left that place saying, all right, may there be welfare for you, the general proclamation, giving and blessings. So Shukracharya left, and then Hiranyakashipu was thinking for a long time, wondering what to do now, what to do, what to do. Seems like it's all over for me. Thinking of the words of Shukra, he felt pain in his heart. So seeing all these terrible omens, the daityas and Hiranyakashipu also. These omens and others also, which have not been described, they're all there, signifying that the demon's dynasty is about to be finished, or that they're in very great trouble. Then Hiranyakashipu took a club in his hand, and rushing with great force, he shook the earth. That's often described in Shastra Sona. It's so powerful that by their very steps they shake the whole earth. Then Hiranyakashipu did something. He scraped his foot on the ground like a boar may do. And by being repeatedly shaken in this way, the earth the earth became completely shaken, and several of the huge snakes, they fell from the shaking of the earth. The snakes, feeling all disturbed, they fell on the earth from the mountaintops. And they were spitting out venom and fire. And then it describes some had 4 hoods, 5 hoods, 7 hoods. Even the very famous and powerful snakes like Vasuki, Takshak, Karkatak, Dhananjay, that's the name of one snake we find in the Bhagavatam also, Elapatra, Kaliya, Mahapadma, Taladwaj, and even Ananta is described, who's Bhagawan, preserver of the earth, having a golden flag, who could not be shaken. Even he was shaken. The mountains, even the mountains in the ocean, right? There are mountains in the ocean. They're not just on the land, but they're also shaken. Everything, even the beautiful, tasteful, beneficent water which bore the luster of the Nagas in Patala, which was difficult to be disturbed, was also disturbed by Hiranyakashipu. He disturbed the rivers, and then again a list of the rivers: Bhagirathi, Sarayu, Kaushiki, Yamuna, Kaveri, Krishna, Vena, Suvena, Godavari, Charmavati, Sindhu, the ocean himself, Shonabhadra River, Narmada, Vedravati, Gomati, Sarasvati, which doesn't have much water, Mahi, Kalanadi, Tamasa, and rivers Sita, Ikshumati, Devika, and Mahanadi. They're all disturbed by the movement of the foot only of Hiranyakashipu on the earth. The whole of Jambadweep, including, which was full of gems, and the country of Swarnakuta with gold mines, everything in the universe was disturbed just by the anger of Hiranyakashipu. Then various countries, one more river mentioned, Lohitya, and then a river surrounded by forests and mountains, then various countries, Kaushikaranya, Dravida country with silver mines, Magad, Anga Vanga, these are all names of old provinces of India. Suhya, maybe that's Sahyadri. Mala, Videha, Malava, Kashi, Koshal provinces, which had been constructed by Vishvakarma, which looked charming like the peaks of the Kailash mountain, the palace of Garuda, built in gold. Everything was disturbed and shaken by Hiranyakashipu. Then the ocean, the red ocean known as Lohitya, which is a very forceful ocean, the ocean with bright water, resembling the white clouds, were also disturbed by him. Then, O king, the mountain Udayagiri, which has the height of 100 yojanas, upon which pedestals of gold have been built, which is served by birds, and which is covered with trees of shal, tal, tamal, golden in, and others golden in color, blossom there always, and are laden with fruits, adding beauty to the Udayagiri mountain. The white roses add to the beauty of the mountain. That mountain was also shaken by the Daitika. So you see in the Bhagavatam we have a summary, and in other Puranas they give in great detail. The vast Ayomukh mountain, decorated with several mountains, metals, and the Malayagiri mountain, having a forest of tamal trees and the fragrance of sandal trees, were also shaken. Then more countries, Sarashtra, Suvalika, Shura, Abhira, Bhoja, Pandya, Banga, Kalinga, Tamralipta, Andhra, Pundra, Vamachura, and Kerala, despite, and also the countries of the gods and Apsaras, were also shaken, and everyone became disturbed. Then the groups of Siddhas and Charanas residing in the hermitage of the sage Agastya on the mountain, which had become inaccessible to others in earlier times, was very beautiful and pleasant. There were many wonderful snakes and birds there, and creepers laden with flowers, and its golden peaks were served by Apsara. Such a nice situation. That was also disturbed by the Daitya king. Then another mountain, Pushpitak, very beautiful mountain, risen up out of the ocean. The sun and the moon rested on its peaks. It's known by the name Priya. It's very dear and lovely. It appears to be like a drawing a line in the sky with the rays of the sun and the moon falling over its peaks. And it rose up out of the ocean, which means that it's surrounded by the ocean. That was also disturbed by the Daitya king. Then another mountain, Vidyutvan, 100 yojanas in length, and lightning often falls. Vidyutvan, the very meaning is that lightning often falls on that mountain. And then there's another mountain in the shape of a bull in which Agastya lives, known as Kunjara Mountain, the abode of many serpents, and known as the invincible city of Vishakaratya, the city of Bhagapur, also shaken by Hiranyakashipu. Then Mahamedagiri, different mountains, Pariyatra Mountain, Chakravanagiri, Varaha Mountain, Golden Pragyotishapur, the abode of the demon Naraka, which is equated with Tejpur, I believe, in Assam. The Meru Mountain, having the thundering sound of the clouds, over which there are 8,000 mountains. They're all shaken. Mahindragiri, the great mountain, which is resplendent like the rising sun and is the abode of the gods, which is the auspicious mountain that is spread up to the heaven, was also shaken by the Daitya. Hemashringa, the great mountain with a golden peak. The mountain Megashaka, which could hardly be shaken at all. And even Kailash mountain was shaken just by the striking of the foot of Hiranyakashipu. He's just showing Nrisimha, hey, you think you're pretty strong? I'm pretty strong too. Look what I can do. So Kailash is the mountain in which in the caves live yakshas, rakshasas, and gandharvas. Its trees are always blossoming. It's always very beautiful. The Vaikanasa Lake, which is covered with golden lotus flowers. Lake Manasarovara, which is the place which is very resorted to by the Rajahamsas, the king among the swans. The Vishringa Mountain, the river Kumari, the Mandrachala Mountain, which is like a pile of snow. The mountain called Ushirabija Rudraprastha, the mountain known as Pushkara, which is the abode of Prajapati, Brahma, everything shaken by the Daitya king. Then mountains, Devavrit, Balukagiri, Krauncha, the mountain of the seven rishis, the Dhumravarna mountain, plus several other mountains, countries, residential places, settlements, rivers and oceans were disturbed. And then the demons of the lower worlds, those who could fly in the sky, Kapila, the son of the earth, Vyaga, Tiger, Ayad, the names of demons, Vyagraksha, eyes like a tiger, Kshiti Kampana, one who makes the earth tremble, and other terrible demons like Meghnad, Ankusha Yodha, creatures of the upper lower regions, and everything was shaken. So it's giving a description of all the main personalities and places in the universe, which were all shaken simply by the striking of the foot of Hiranyakashipu. Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, apprehensive of the killing of the people, the gods felt frightened. They thought, well, everyone in the universe is going to die from this shaking. It's like an earthquake all over the universe. So they approached Narasimha Dev Bhagavan, the Adityas, the Sadyas, the Vishvedes, the Marudgans, the Rudras. They list them again and again. They approached him and said, can you kill him? Just kill him. He's too dangerous for the whole world. And kill all the other demons too. You can do it. We can't do it. You alone can do it. So do it, please, for the benefit of the universe. After all, you are the guru of all the worlds. You are the god of Indra and Brahma. There's no one else in the world who can give refuge to the people like you can, nor anyone in the future. Then Narasimha, what does he do? He's a lion. He roared. And with the lion's roar, he shattered the hearts of all the demons. Their minds became disturbed. Then Hiranyakashipu, not afraid, looking like a thick, dense cloud, and he was forceful like the clouds, and he also thundered like the clouds, having the complexion of the clouds. Hiranyakashipu, the son of Diti, who was the enemy of the demigods, who was very puffed up, arrogant, proud of his prowess, he, along with the other daityas, rushed at Lord Narasimha. Then various names of the demons are given. So, here we go. Krodavash, Kalakeya, Vaigaleya, Vainghikeya, Sanghradirya, Mahanada, Mahavega, Kapila the son of Mahi, Vyagakraksha, already stated, Kshiti Kampana, and demons who roam in the sky, demons who go under the earth, and other demons, including Meghnad, already stated, Ankushayudha, Urdvaga, Bhimaveg, Bhimakarma, Askalochana, Vajra, Shuli, Karala, Hiranyakashipu. He was there, thundering like the clouds. So they all attacked Narasimha together. Then in the battle, Narasimha, chanting Om, got up and with his long and sharp nails tore out the chest of the Daitya king and killed him. There you are. So he did no big description of the fight. Just killed him, that's all. Didn't come out of a pillar. With the destruction of Hiranyakashipu, the entire earth, the lokas, the moon, the sky, the planets, the sun, all the directions, the rivers, the mountains, the great oceans, were filled with light and delight. Then the gods, becoming blissful, the rishis who performed tapasya, they all offered prayers to Lord Narasimha. As if blessing him, the gods said, Oh, you have taken this form of Narasimha. You'll be adored by all learned people who are well versed in knowledge of cause and effect, and those having full knowledge of past, present, and future. This form of Narasimha will become well known in all the worlds and among all living beings. The Munis will adore you as Mrigendra or Narasimha, and by your grace we shall regain our lost place. Narasimha was very pleased then to hear this, and then Lord Brahma prayed to Lord Vishnu in the form of Narasimha, you are beyond destruction, you are Avyakta, you are not seen, or you are unmanifest, invisible, beyond vision, beyond thought. The highest, most confidential truth, indestructible. You have no creator. You are the creator of all. You are the eternal Brahman, free from all grief or anything undesirable. You know everything, all the knowledge of Sankhya Yogi or the very form of knowledge. You are the eternal supreme Paramatma. You are the manifest and the non-manifest. The entire world has come out of you. Oh God, Brahma, I'm my form comes from you. You are our soul. You are our Lord. Your form has four parts: Vishva, the universe; Tejas, luminous objects; Pragya, wisdom; and Turiya, the divine being beyond everything. You are the perceptor of all the worlds. You pervade all the worlds. With every thousand chatter yogas, you cause the end of all the lokas, becoming Kala, or the god of time, death for all. You are the basis of all, of everything in existence. Your strength and valor is immeasurable. You are the supreme goal for Kapila and other renunciants by the process of Sankhya Yoga. You are the beginning, the middle, and everything. You are Purushottam, the supreme person, the soul of all. You are Brahma, Rudra, Varuna, and Yama. You are the creator and the destroyer. You are the eternal lord of all the lokas. The people, who are knowledgeable people, they call you. They know that you are Param Siddhi, supreme success. You are the Param Deva, the supreme god. You are the Param Mantra, the supreme mantra, the supreme mind, the supreme dharma, the supreme glory, and the supreme and eternal person. Those who are learned call you the supreme truth, the best offering in sacrifice, the supreme auspicious, the best path, the best performer of sacrifices, the best sacrifice, and again, the best Purana Purush. The learned people say that you have the best form, the supreme form. You are the supreme sacred place. You are the supreme Tirtha. Paramdhamma. Yeah, not. You are the supreme yoga. You are the supreme speech. You are the supreme secret. You are the supreme movement. And you are the supreme and best Purana Purush. The highest state of being, which is beyond everything else which is high, the one who is the supreme God beyond everything else, that is you. You are the one who are called the supreme Purana Purush by the learned people. Parang Parasyam. You are the supreme Lord who is beyond Pradhan, beyond Puran, beyond everything. You are the greatest one, you are the supreme creator, and the learned people call you as the best Purana Purush. The supreme secret, the highest secret, the supreme highest truth, the supreme tapasya, everything is in your form. The sages and rishis, the learned people call you the supreme Purana Purush. You are the supreme abode of refuge. The learned people call you the supreme secret, the supreme place of refuge, the supreme yoga, the supreme influence, and the supreme Purana Purush. Vaishampayana said, O Janamajaya, thus speaking and eulogizing Lord Narayana, the grandsire of the universe, Lord Brahma, who is also known as Bhagavan, retired to Brahmaloka. Then it was time to have a party, and the apsara, there's musical instruments, and the apsara started dancing, and Lord Hari went back to the ocean of milk, and he took to his usual form, and he reached the place. He went back to his own place, and there you go. That's the end of the story. How Lord Vishnu in the form of Narasimha, in previous times killed Hiranyakashipu. So that's it from the Harivamsa. So today there's going to be an initiation ceremony. So we pray for the mercy of Lord Narasimhadev on all those who will be initiated today. May you be blessed with spiritual power of Narasimhadev and protected. Hare Krishna. Sri Narasimhadev Bhagawan Ki Jai. Not much mention of Prahlad in there, huh? It's different. Sri Narasimhadev Bhagawan Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.